on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Tuesday, May 28th, 2024 edition. I hope everyone had a wonderful holiday weekend, and I hope you're ready for an exciting and interesting week in markets. It's a holiday shortened one, but that doesn't mean anything. The goal here on each show is to help you become a better investor. Take the data that you are getting each and every day and try to distill it down to actionable items for you. And perspective developed with over 20 plus years of investment experience. And that's our job here, is to help you take that next step. You're not going to get to your goals in one day, one week, or even one year. But when you add up lesson after lesson, concept after concept, so that you make good decisions, well, you can reach your goals, whatever that is. Everyone's different. Some people want to travel the world. Others want to stay home with the grandkids in their elder years. Some people want to retire early and maybe volunteer or do whatever they want. Everyone's life path is different. Everyone starts at a different place, but those concepts are similar. The concepts that are needed in order to make good decisions. So that's the goal here each and every weekday. And of course, we're going to run down the market performance as well as run down some show topics. But right after we tackle our first caller question now.
Hello, gentlemen. I'm calling regarding a ETF, Global X Super Dividend US ETF. Stock symbol is DIV. Wanted to get your thoughts on it. Looks like it's been getting beat up a lot lately. Wondering if it's a good time to get in. I look forward to your answer. Thank you for all you do.
All right. This is the Global X Super Dividend US ETF. It's all US companies. And Morningstar gives it 1 star out of 5 and a negative rating. And let's dig into why. First off, the expense ratio is 45 basis points. Kind of on the high side, I would say, for an ETF. And then you look at the performance, and it is, needless to say, rough. This year, it's up 2.6%. Last year, it was down nearly 2%. Now, 2022, it did well, only down about 4% when the market was down 20%. But you're not getting good performance over any length of time. Let's go all the way back. Let's look at a 10-year performance figure. Just looking at it. There it is. 10-year. It is in the 100th percentile of similar funds. And if you think 100 and you think that's good, you're wrong. It's the other side. It's the worst. It's literally the worst fund in this category in the last 10 years. Think about that. That's looking at mid-cap value. That's kind of what it is, small to mid-cap value. So it's comparing against all the other small to mid-cap value funds, and it's the worst in the 10-year time frame as well as the 5-year time frame. The 3-year time frame, it's the 91st percentile, so there's 9% of funds that are worse than this, but 91% of funds that are better. Over the last 1 year, it's in the 88th percentile, means that only 12% of funds did worse than this. So needless to say, this is atrocious. And this is a perfect example of why you don't just look at dividends. This is why we are doing this webinar coming up on June 11th. It's because people are focused on the dividend. And this will say it's earning, the yield is 7% trailing 12 months. And a lot of people say that's high. That sounds good. But overall performance is atrocious, regardless of the dividend yield. Because those performance figures are including dividends. Including dividends. So I'm not sure the process here of how they construct the portfolio, but it's clearly bad. And all the numbers back it up. And that's why Morningstar has it at 1 star and a negative rating. So absolutely move on from DIV. Now we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes. And this is one of my favorite topics. And it is about finding the right kind of financial content providers. Social media is so big these days. Social media is so big. And we have a little presence on social media. Obviously, it's not that big. We focus more on YouTube. And the main reason is because it's hard to really get a good, a big following without being clickbaity. And unfortunately, the clickbaitiness of a lot of social media lends its hand to a lot of bad actors, a lot of those that have bad incentives and give bad advice. So we're going to dig into finfluencers on social media. And there's a new study coming out of Berkeley. And we're going to give you some data on that to help you understand the type of influencers you should be paying attention to and the ones you should avoid at all costs. We also have some other topics on the docket. One is in regards to the CAPE ratio. This is a ratio that a lot of doomers, shall I say, point to saying the market is drastically overvalued. Well, it's more overvalued than it has been, but there are a few good reasons why that might stay that way. Meaning, we might be at a much average higher valuation than we were in the past. We'll dig into that, see which arguments I think hold water and which ones I think are a little aggressive. Okay. And then also Roth conversions, backdoor Roth conversions. We're going to dig into that story and some tips there. And then if we have time, baby boomers. The boomer generation has a ton of money, far more at their age than previous generations before them. Talking about equity holdings as well as real estate holdings, etc. But they're not spending very much. And we're going to talk about why that is and whether they will eventually open up their purse strings, because it will have a huge ramification on economies if they do. So those are the topics on the docket for me today. We also have voice bank questions in regards to Aflac, as well as Apple Hospitality REIT. And we also have a question that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now at 888-99-CHART. Those are always most important and top of mind for us. So if you call in, we will get to you. Now, I will cover today's market activity next. But if you are a serious investor and serious about improving your investing skills, I encourage you to head over to our website, investtalk.com, and sign up for the new InvestTalk Wealth webinar, Quality Investing, Digging Deeper Than Dividends. It's all new. It's free, but you must sign up. We're going to dig into the importance of fundamentals like profitability and balance sheet strength, and it all happens on June 11th at 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific time. Just head over to investtalk.com right now to register for our free upcoming wealth webinar. But my phone lines are open waiting for you at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to or should I sell it.
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
So I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc.
It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART. This is InvestTalk with more than 58 million downloads. Justin Klein is here now, taking your calls live. 888-99-CHART.
Now let's take a look at the market today. It was a modestly negative day overall for the indices. Actually, the S&P did close up 1.3 points, so I guess it was mildly positive. But if you look at some of the broader indices, they were down. The NYSE was down over 100 points, so about a little over 0.5% there. So it was a very interesting day in markets as we head into this shortened week. Small caps were down 0.75%. Mid caps were the worst, down nearly 1%. What were the big movers here? GameStop was up 25%. DraftKings was down 10%. Moderna down 8%. Let's see, any other big movers here? NVIDIA up another 7%, so that was interesting. It continued its advance. And usually when you have these earnings announcements, you have 3 days for the market to kind of settle in, and that's what we got. Here was our third day, and clearly held those gains for now. So we'll see what that looks like. Crypto over the weekend, that was mixed. You had gold prices that were up, so that was another continuation there. Just broader commodities are really surging higher. And, you know, the big question is, how sustainable is that? Now, if the economy continues to grow globally and you still have rate cuts on the horizon, then there's no reason to think that can't continue. Okay. Let me just pull up. There it is. Yeah, the commodity index, sir, it was down the last 3 days of last week, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And today, it erased almost all of those losses. So very, very nice strength out of the commodity space to start this week after a mild pullback at the end of last week. So that was pretty much it. Not a whole lot of news otherwise. And I'm still kind of neutral in the markets at this point, just because it's a bit overbought, probably needs to consolidate a little bit. And I think that's what we're heading into, is a third quarter where the liquidity dynamics are a little bit less favorable to asset prices. And, you know, being overbought, we imagine there's going to be a choppier period ahead of us to kind of consolidate those gains. Very similar to what we saw back in last summer. But not quite as much of a pullback. So that's kind of the market we see going forward as we head into the summer. Now, I hope you've been telling your friends about the InvestTalk podcast and the fact that it's in video form over on YouTube. And we get questions every single day via the comment section over there. And let's grab one right now. Carter Erickson says, I would like to get your thoughts on BN Brookfield. And this is an interesting one, considering today was a pretty rough day for Brookfield. It was, let's see, it was down about 3%, 2.75%. Let me pull it up on a different screen here. I have so many data. We have so many data services that you never know exactly which one's going to give you the best data based on the name, because sometimes it just depends on the sector, really. Yeah, Brookfield down about 2.7%. Doesn't sound like a lot, but definitely a reversal candle after a rally from about $38 per share in mid-April. It recently peaked out right around $45 per share. Now we're at $43.55 at the close today. So it does look like it's set for a bit of a pullback. Let me see if there's any news here. No, that's an old news. I don't see any major news that would cause that. But let's take a look at what they do. Okay, This is a global alternative asset manager with over $750 billion in assets. And it has three businesses: asset management, insurance solutions, and an operating business. And it mainly invests in real estate assets. That's the backbone of the business. A lot of infrastructure assets. So I generally like that, but I do think it's a bit overbought now and needs a pullback. So I like where it's at. The history of the operations is a bit choppy, meaning earnings rise and they have a bit of a setback and then they power higher. So I worry about that kind of lack of consistency there, and recent free cash flow is negative. So I don't like that. But I would need a significant pullback, probably close to around $35 level, to get interested in Brookfield BN. So the call. Now we're going to take a short break, still to come, answering your caller questions as well as our main focus point. This is Invest Talk. Give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
The next Invest Talk Wealth webinar is coming up soon, Tuesday, June 11th. It's all happening online, and it's free. Register now at investtalk.com.
Now, our main focus point covers this story. Finfluencers, and finding the right kind of financial content provider for you. And this was a very interesting study coming out of the University of California, Berkeley, as well as Louisiana State University. And the implications of this report are very troubling. And what it basically shows is that the vast majority of finfluencers out there are what we call anti-skilled, or what they called anti-skilled, generating a negative 2.3% monthly abnormal return. Sorry, negative 2.3. Did I say negative? Negative 2.3. Meaning if you follow their advice, you would underperform on a monthly basis by 2.3%. That's 56%, the majority of those that are out there. Now, 16% are simply unskilled, meaning you follow their advice, you're not going to get much of a difference from the average return either way. Only 28% are considered skilled, meaning generating 2.6% plus the average return. And what they did was they analyzed 29,000 tweets on Twitter or X, and they found that it was mainly detrimental to your financial health to follow these finfluencers. Now, generally, financial education is good. And we are all for financial education. That's why we're here, right? But there are a lot of bad actors giving questionable advice for monetary gain or just simply more clicks, social media fame, more followers. And unfortunately, on social media, those that are the loudest, that make the most extraordinary claims, they drive traffic. And they elicit large volumes of likes and shares. And what does that mean? It hits the algorithm and they get promoted. Now, one of the main reasons that people follow these type of influencers is because they tend to align with their own beliefs or behavioral traits. I always think first and foremost, political beliefs, right? Somebody that might align with your political beliefs one way or the other, you're going to have a higher affinity for them and believe them a bit more. If they are of similar age to you or similar racial or sex background, right? If you're a male, you tend to listen to more male influencers. If you're female, you tend to listen to more female influencers. That is our natural tendency. And so when you are on social media, what you have to do is almost fight that. And you need to differentiate between the influencers. Are they just straight up influencers? Are they knowledge sharers or are they thought leaders? An influencer's goal is to generate revenues from endorsements mainly. They want things to become more viral because they want more likes, shares. They want it to hit the algorithm. And I understand that. Right? We're on YouTube. It's recent. And there are little things that we can do with our thumbnails that make people tend to click on it more. And, you know, we'll lean into that a little bit, but we're also not going to go overboard and make things look crazy and wild and out of place and unprofessional. But others are willing to do that, and they'll benefit from that, unfortunately. But they do that because the data says that they will get more clicks. But it has nothing to do with whether the content is better or not, if you can make a better thumbnail or not. I just think of Mr. Beast. Mr. Beast will tell everyone, has told many times, that he has built his following and his empire based on thumbnails. And he was the first to kind of perfect the thumbnail. And then there are knowledge sharers. Someone that, you know, they might sell online classes, book sales, newsletter subscriptions. And, you know, those tend to be, they can be bad, but they're less often bad. Okay. And then there's the financial professional, the thought leader. You think of people who've been in the industry a long time that don't really need the money, but they are passionate about it. They write about it. They make long posts. They're not clickbaity, right? They post a lot of times on LinkedIn as opposed to Facebook, for example. Now, the scam space is never more prevalent than in the crypto space, where influencers tout knowledge, expertise, and credentials when there really aren't any, right? Because it's so new and there's no way to credential anything. And most of the time, they're launching quote-unquote projects that are mainly pump and dump schemes on newly minted coins. So that's where most of the danger comes from. But it's not only in the crypto space. So what you need to do, or try to do at least, is click, like, and share content from people you know don't have an angle, that are truly educators, thought leaders, and help improve the financial education landscape that's out there on social media. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic: 5 key lessons taken from the study of U.S. financial history. We'll look at that story tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein, and ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
No two portfolios are alike, and every investor has a unique set of circumstances. So don't forget to call Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Zach calling from Michigan.
It seems like everyone is either starting a side hustle or becoming their own boss. And you know what they're hearing a lot? It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/sell23, all lowercase. Whether you're selling loafers or peace lilies, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person. Covering all sales channels, from a shop front POS system to its all-in-one e-commerce platform, Shopify even gets you selling across social media marketplaces. With their 24/7 help and extensive business calls library, Shopify is ready to support your success every step of the way. Go to shopify.co.uk/sell23 to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.co.uk/sell23.
I had a question about AFLAC, ticker AFL. I don't want to bore you guys with a long story, but my grandfather, who was a blue chip dividend investor to his core, gifted me shares of AFLAC when I turned 13 to teach me about compound interest, and even sold me on not getting any Christmas or birthday presents anymore and just getting money sent to AFLAC. And I'm really happy that he did, because it grew and grew over 20 years, the last 20 years. And I eventually transferred it to my brokerage account when I learned how to do all of that. And yeah, I still hold it. I have cut back some, and I don't reinvest the dividends anymore, just because it does take up probably 15% of my overall portfolio, and I'm trying to obviously catch that up. But yeah, I just never really hear the stock talked about much, and I was just wondering if you guys could talk a little bit about it. Kind of has some sentimental value to me, if there was such a thing. So I appreciate all you guys do. Love the new YouTube show, and yeah, looking forward to the new webinar. Thanks so much. Bye.
Thank you, and congratulations for having a, I think it was, you said it was your grandfather who gifted this to you over time. And yeah, I mean, Aflac, been around a long time. We know the Aflac duck, and they're headquartered in Columbus, but this is mainly, and a lot of people don't know this, it's mainly a Japanese firm. That's where the majority of the revenue comes from. And earnings are continuing to power higher, and a big part of that is the free cash flow that they're using to buy back shares in a big, big way. And this is just a consistent performer, one of those quality names. And a lot of people are going to look at the dividend yield, 2.1, 2.2%, and they won't get excited about that. But this is a business that is far more attractive than the vast majority of dividend payers that are out there, and has a much better longer-term return than most of the dividend payers that are out there. As this caller said, right? Said, the power of compounding, growing the to 15% of the overall portfolio. And it's a very good business. Return on equity around 24%. Return on invested capital around 18.5%. Both very high quality numbers. They have $3 billion in free cash flow on a $49 billion market cap. So about a 6% free cash flow yield right there. Not bad. Its shares outstanding has gone from, let's see, back in 1993. This is the chart going all the way back. They started buying back shares in 1993. They had 1.24 billion shares outstanding. Now they have 568 million shares outstanding. So they've bought back over half of their shares in the past 30 years or so. And they continue to do so with that cash flow. And the stock continues to go up. So I applaud you for holding on. I applaud you for not reinvesting the dividends, because 15% is pretty high, and you should never, it's smart to maybe start to diversify, take those dividends and put that elsewhere, and maybe bring that down over time. But if you're going to have any company that's 15% of your portfolio, this is the type of one that you'd want to have. Something that is very consistent, right? Life insurer, health, disability, etc. And that's not really going away. So yeah, good name. I like Aflac. Now, whenever I can, I play two in a row. So let's grab another caller question now from 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Justin and Luke. This is Paula from Davisburg. I have a question about Apple Hospitality REIT. The stock price has gone down a lot. I think it is because of the consumer sentiment, which is not as good. And I was actually thinking of accumulating more shares, because I think long-term this REIT is in a good position. It has like not much debt. I think the cash flow is quite good. Looking forward to what you guys think about the company and the current price, and if it's a buy at this point, like, is it good like to accumulate more? Bye-bye.
All right, this is Apple Hospitality, not Apple Computer or Apple Phone, just Apple, right? Just Apple Hospitality REIT. And this is a hotel REIT, and they mainly operate under the Marriott and Hilton brands. They don't own all of them or run all of them, but they own a good, healthy chunk there. And if you look at the profitability, return on invested capital, only 4.25%, return on equity, 6%. Its payout ratio is 118%, but cash dividend payout ratio is 72%. So I think that is fine for now. I don't think the dividend is in jeopardy at the current moment, especially because cash flow remains relatively steady around the level of 2018, but there's no growth there, right? So pretty much flat. If you see through the COVID dip, it's been a flat free cash flow picture for the past 5-6 years or so. They do have a decent amount of debt, about $1.5 billion on a $3.5 billion market cap. That's okay. It's fine with it. But it is in a downtrend. The relative strength here is pretty bad. Relative strength is only 22. And if I run a ratio, which I want to do right now, to the XLRE, which is the real estate ETF, this has been in a downtrend really since November. And if I zoom out, yeah, it really hasn't. It's been a basically a sector performer since 2019, pre-pandemic. So it's okay. It's definitely not the worst REIT out there. I just think you can do better, frankly. I don't love the profitability. I don't love the technicals. You know, hotel REITs, they're kind of middling. Once again, they tend to not be terrible or great, and that's what kind of this one is. So I think you can find better opportunities out there in the REIT space. Thanks for the call. Now let's talk a little bit about valuations. And I want to hit on this because there are a lot of doomers out there. I talk about this a lot and it hits our emotions, and it's easy to kind of curve fit the data to fit a narrative. And a very common one is what we call the Shiller P ratio. This was brought to light by Robert Shiller. I believe he was a professor maybe at Wharton. I forget exactly what big university it was. But basically what his data series said was that over time, P ratios were mean reverting. Meaning there's a long-term average. And if you take the average earnings over 10 years and you look at the current price, you're going to say, okay, the market's going to come back to the average amount of earnings and then probably then some, right? And go the other direction. And when stocks are historically cheap, that's when you want to pick up those shares. Now, through 1995, the data series, going back to the late 1800s, was fairly mean reverting, around 15, meaning the cyclically adjusted P ratio, the CAPE ratio, peaked out usually in the mid-20s, 1929, got all the way up to 31, 32, and then it would mean revert. And in the early 80s, it went all the way down to 3 or 4, okay? So basically, it was saying if it was above that, it's overvalued. If it's below that, it's undervalued. And we said this many times, while that's interesting, number one lesson you always have to learn is valuations are the worst way to time the market. Over a 1-year period, valuations have almost no correlation to future returns. So if you go into a particular year, the P ratio is X, that's not indicative of what the market's going to do over the next year. Now you start going out farther, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, valuations start to have a more predictive power. Now, are they the end all be all? No. They're just more predictive. They tend to indicate future returns. And it's one piece of the puzzle that does matter over an extended period of time. But over a 1-year time frame, it doesn't matter. It's far more about liquidity and earnings trends, economic growth, inflation, etc. Those are far more important than valuation. But what's clear about valuations is that about 30 years ago, mid-90s, there's been a higher level of average valuation for markets, for equity markets. Now, there's still a long-term statistical relationship between valuations and returns, but persistently higher valuations could be telling you something, right? It's not a flash in the pan, and we're talking about nearly 3 decades now. And there could be various reasons for that. Number one, it could be economic cycles are simply milder, right? Meaning from 1854 to 1980, the U.S. was in, or sorry, until World War II, excuse me, The U.S. was in recession 42% of the time. 42. But since 1980, only 11% of the time we've been in a recession. So if the economic volatility is lower, overall earnings volatility is going to be lower because there's a correlation there. And just like any stock, if there's lower levels of earnings volatility, it deserves a better valuation. As well as say commodity producers, they tend to trade at lower valuations. Why? Because earnings tend to vary widely. Whereas packaged food companies, they tend to trade at market premiums because it's a little more predictable. So predictability of earnings has improved. Now that is an argument I buy. I think that more consistency of earnings, it makes sense that you're going to pay a little bit more. Now, another reason could be, hey, markets have a lot more fast-growing companies. You see that now, right? With the Mag 7. Now, things can go either way. However, they're higher risk. Look at Tesla now, right? Tesla's now down since it entered the S&P 500. I don't know if you know that. A lot of people don't know that. December 21st, Tesla entered the S&P 500, and it is now down roughly 10% since then. So with that growth and higher valuation comes more risk. And we've seen that in history. That you have the GEs, the IBMs, the Nokias of the world that were market behemoths, that were the leaders in the industry, and especially in technology, those advantages can disappear rather quickly. And the odds are good that many of the Mag 7 today will not be market leaders in a decade. And so do they deserve to have a premium valuation? Yes, their growth is higher, but I believe their risk of falling from their perch is a lot higher as well. Now, that depends on what name you're talking about, obviously, but in general. So I don't really buy that argument. Now, there's a third argument, which is market liquidity. If you have two investments and the expectation for the returns is exactly the same, but one you could sell tomorrow at the drop of a hat and get the cash today. The other, you may not be able to sell it right away. It might take a week or a month or a year. You're going to pick the one that's more liquid, right? You're getting the same return, but a far more liquidity. So eventually, investors are going to bid up that more liquid asset, and the longer-term expected returns are going to be lower, valuations are going to be higher, et cetera. So liquidity, I think generally, broadly has improved. Now that does depend on what stock you're talking about, right? Is Google more or less liquid than GE was in the 1970s? Not really. They were both highly liquid stocks at both instances. A big difference that I would argue today, though, is that markets are cheaper to transact. And so if they're cheaper to transact, well, it's just put that valuation into the stock. Net-net, I'm paying the same as opposed to, 50 years ago when you're paying, a pretty high commission. So that's one of my arguments, is that commissions have been nosediving since the early 80s. Now, another argument is productivity. Productivity has exploded in the 90s because of technology. And ultimately, that manifests in higher earnings growth as long as that productivity stays relatively elevated. I don't know if I really buy that argument, though, because I don't think investors care where growth comes from or where earnings come from. They just care that they're there. So there are a lot of arguments as to why markets have been overvalued. Okay. It's up to you to figure out which one is valid. I gave you my take, and know that there is no right answer here. You're never going to know exactly. But these are factors that can tell you, that can explain why valuations now are, on average, higher. And I think many of them do hold water. To what degree? That's up to you. But understand that the fear mongering that's out there, you know, they're not paying attention to these things. Things that, factors that absolutely have validity. Now, this is Invest Talk. We're moving closer to 59 million downloads. So please tell your friends and family about the free podcast downloads you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And we're heading into our final break right now. So I'm ready to take your questions live at 888-99-CHART.
The next InvestTalk Wealth webinar is coming up soon, Tuesday, June 11th. It's all happening online, and it's free. Join Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero as they explore the aspects of quality investing and why it's essential to look beyond high dividend yields. The InvestTalk Wealth webinar, Quality Investing, Digging Deeper Than Dividends, June 11th. 1 to 2 Pacific Time. Register now at investtalk.com.
Hi, guys. This is Scott from Pleasanton. I've been a holder of Copart, CPRT, for a number of years, done quite well, but it seems to be kind of floating now, and I wanted to get your opinion of the stock and its future prospects. Again, hope Steve's doing better. Take care, and thank you for your program. I usually listen to it on a podcast, and I'll take my answer on the podcast. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, looking at Copart. This is based in Dallas, and they operate online salvage vehicle auctions with operations in 11 countries across North America, Europe, and the Middle East. And this is very interesting. It kind of ties to our webinar coming up. And it's about quality investing. This is a company that does not pay a dividend. Zero dividend. But it is an incredible performer. Okay. Return on equity, 21.6%. No debt on its balance sheet. Free cash flow of $848 million. Now, that's good. Problem is the market cap is $50 billion, or enterprise value about $49 billion. And that puts the enterprise value to EBIT around 27 times. Price of sales around 12.3. That's pretty expensive. Okay? That's very expensive. But it's a very good business. And this is a dilemma that you have as a quality investor. Not a dividend investor, but a quality investor, because this is definitely a quality company. It's 15-year total return, 25%. 10-year total return, 28% annual. Think about that. How many dividend payers are returning that? Very, very few. So all you're looking at are dividends. You're going to completely ignore this name. Now, this is interesting because recently, I was actually looking at this name, right? We look at all the companies that have high profitability. Well, we want to buy them at a reasonable price. And the problem with Copart has been for a while that it's just pretty expensive. Trading about a 40 times current earnings, forward-looking earnings is trading at still around 35 times, which is very expensive. So what do we do? There's a competitor. It was recently purchased. I won't tell you by what company, but dig in. And that's what we did here. As I dug in, I said, okay, what's the competitive landscape of this business? Who are the competitors? Oh, their competitor just bought it. Who bought it? Well, a company that is also very well run in a very similar business to Copart, and there are a lot of synergies. We picked up that name instead. And I think they could bring their competitor up to the profitability of Copart. And if they can, it's going to be a big performer. There's a risk there. But I'd rather pay a much lower valuation for that potential upside than a high valuation for, you know, a very good business, but you know, I think it's gone a little too far and the stock is starting to roll over. And I would say this is a time you probably want to trim Copart because it's expensive and because that competitor is now being run better in our mind. And so this is sometimes what happens when you are doing an analysis on a company. You find other companies and say, oh, that's an interesting competitor. I haven't dug deeper. Let me dig deeper. Why is this business maybe not performing as well? And sometimes it can be anomalous factors. Pays a higher dividend, so it's going up faster because people are buying dividend payers. Or just has a more well-known name and better marketer, but this other business is stronger. Or there's an acquisition. There's a lot of factors that can go into, hey, good business, but I like this other one, better risk versus reward elsewhere. And that's what we came down as. And so that's why I would be trimming Copart. Well, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And make sure to head over to YouTube and check us out in video form. You can see the charts and graphs that I'm looking at each and every day when we're answering these questions. Search Invest Talk with two T's. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.
When it comes to ensuring your company has top-notch security practices, things can get complicated fast. Vanta automates compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, GDPR, and more, saving you time and money. With Vanta, you can unify your security program management with a built-in risk register and reporting, and proactively manage security reviews with AI-powered security questionnaires. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to build trust and prove security in real time. Learn more at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go.